There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two. Glad to have y'all here on this Monday. And text line is open. Obviously, it's getting pretty busy over there. You can also, I'd love to hear your voice at 343-0106. And yeah, part of today's show is we're looking at the start of session in Montgomery. And I know there's a lot of things that are in the discussion right now in international news and, of course, national news with the members of the House and Senate arriving back in Washington tomorrow, but I'm looking at early February, February 4th, and the start of session in Montgomery. And we're going to check in now with State Senator Chris Elliott to talk more about that. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me back on.
February 4th is coming quick, man.
It is. I've started doing laundry, so I can be ready.
As you get ready for session, part of this, of what goes on. You were talking about this with us back in maybe October or November, that while February 4th is on the calendar is when you get started officially in Montgomery, y'all don't just get there and then start in February.
Right, and the analogy I like to use is, you know, if you've got somebody that's, you know, you're hiking the ball and you don't have the play called yet, you got a problem. And that's where we are. We're about to snap the ball, but the play needs to be called already, and you ought to have all your plays designed. And that's really where we are. I think you'll see over the next month people trying to put final touches on at least the first draft of legislation that will, you know, go through committee in the process and be amended. But you need to have your stuff ready to go and ready to file. If you haven't pre-filed it already, be ready to file it pretty quickly so we can get to work.
Do you ever look at anything like this and say, okay, we're gonna pre-file this and then I'm gonna bring this bill. It'd be SB whatever. It's SB 0001. Or bring this bill out. Do you already know what your opponents may say or what compromises might be asked for, and you almost have worked on the second version of it? You see what I'm saying? You know that I'm going to bring this, and this is the start of a negotiation, right? And they're going to come with this, so then I can be ready to counter with that. Do you ever go one more step?
So absolutely, and a good example of that was Senate Bill 23 that I filed last year, which did away with police jurisdictions, extraterritorial jurisdictions in their entirety. And it was, you know, some people said, well, that was throwing a grenade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've been dancing around this issue for a very, very long time. And frankly, it was time to get some folks' attention and say, look, instead of the pages and pages and you know, lines of code over and over and over again, let's get this a little bit simpler, because as you're seeing in Mobile right now, this is a problem. This continues to be a problem across the entire state. It's complicated. It's confusing. It's confusing to the public. It's confusing to first responders. It's confusing to tax collectors. And it's confusing to good people like me that go, hold on just a second, how is this right? So it's something that needs to be fixed. We ended up with a compromise. You said, you know, kind of your backup plan. What does that look
mm-hmm.
like? We ended up with a compromise that came out of the Senate that passed unanimously out of the Senate. The House never took it up for action. But we'll be reintroducing another version of it, you know, coming up here this session, so that hopefully we can get some action like this and avoid the problems we're having in Mobile and elsewhere across the state.
Yeah, there's part of this, Senator Elliott, that is, like, people say, well, this is the way it ought to be, and then there's the way it is. And, I mean, you said something here in an interview, you talked about it with me in the past, you didn't like the taxation without representation, right? I mean, you boiled it down to that. You feel that, like, one of your issues with PJs is taxation without representation.
Absolutely. We've got,
how does that work?
You know,
explain
elected officials
to,
yeah, policing, taxing, and regulating people that can't vote for them.
And that's something that you're one of the very few I've heard making that argument, because you're almost making an idealistic argument on top of everybody else making pragmatic arguments about PJs and cost and growth of cities or non-growth of cities. But you're boiling it back to the fact that people are in the case of PJs, they don't have representation to the people that tax them, even though I guess the county still, they have their representatives there, but they don't in a city capacity.
Well, that's it, and that's exactly right. You're not dealing with county zoning ordinances. You're not dealing with county subdivision ordinances. You're not dealing with county sign ordinances or even the county sheriff. You're dealing with folks that are enforcing regulations that you have zero input on. You're dealing with folks policing you that you have zero recourse for in an election. And oh, by the way, these folks are taxing you, and you can't vote for them. And I'm sorry, but it does go back to James Otis and the Stamp Act and, you know, back to our founding fathers. And, yeah, the principle is important at some point. Now, having said all that, we do need to look at the practical implication in what's going on right now. Again, Westmobile is a good example of that. What's been done for years, and how do we unwind ourselves from this mess?
Right.
I don't mind taking our time doing it. I don't mind a graduated or approach at all. As a matter of fact, I think that's the way we need to go. But at some point, we have to realize that fundamentally, the way we've been doing it is wrong. And it is against what principled Americans, not just Alabamians, think. I mean, Sean, there are only three states in the country that do this. The rest have already realized the error of their ways. Not that that's something unusual for Alabama. But we could at least head in the right direction.
Well, I mean, that's part of my problem, though, that it's until you sit down and look at something like this, or somebody like you brings the issue up and you kind of get in a discussion. I don't know. It's the danger of I grew up here, and there's always been PJs, right? And it's just been part of the deal for Mobile. So I just, you know, I never thought about, yeah, what were the idealistic issues with it, because it just was always there.
Well, you know, that's one of my least favorite things to hear a state employee or a county employee say is we've always done it this way.
Right.
That's never a good reason for me as to why we should continue to do it that way. And while it has always been there and we've always done it this way, Sean, there have always been bills that dealt with this in the legislature. The legislature spends an inordinate amount of time dealing with this type of relationship or interaction between county and municipal governments.
Huh.
It is a never-ending. There are bills filed all the time. There are local laws filed all the time. And there are people that, you know, that move here. There are people that have lived here their whole life that go, hold on just a second. I want to do a family subdivision of my land so that my kid can move on some acreage that I have back behind my house.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, you may have a municipality that doesn't let you do that. We have that on the Eastern Shore going on right now. The problem is they don't live in that municipality. How is it okay that those rules apply outside of the municipality? How is it okay that a convenience store, that a farmer's market is taxed by folks that they can't vote for? How is it okay that a farmer 4 miles outside of the town of whatever can be told you can't have a sign that says fresh okra because it violates the sign ordinance of a town you don't live in?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think people have not thought about. That's why I appreciate your challenge to this, because once again, we seem to get really caught up in the pragmatic part of PJ discussion of, you know, how much money and is it a half of a business license and half percentage sales tax, all that, and lose sight of the fact that there's a bunch of people that are in PJs that are given rules to comply with and taxes to be paid, and they could vote to be part of the PJ, but they can't vote on the people to represent them. I think you bring up a very interesting argument.
Well, this is, I think, a kind of a microcosm of what is government creep, right? It's mm-hmm. government that likes power, that likes authority, and in this case, it's municipal governments, that like to be able to say, well, we have to protect those people out there. Or we have to protect our people from those crazy people out there that may want to sell fresh okra in their front yard. And oh my goodness gracious, what would that do for us, you know, in the city of whatever?
Well, there's also people that want, but there's on the, sticking with the pragmatic argument, on the flip side, there's people inside the police jurisdiction say, I sure want to have this fire, police, and ambulance coverage.
Of course, and that is, that brings up the very the other side of this argument that I think is a good one, and I think one you'll see in cities around the state, and we are seeing. Then annex into the city. If you want the service and the coverage that comes along with being in a city, I live in a city. Mm-hmm. I like having good police protection. I like having good fire protection. I like somebody to come by and sweep my street. You know, the county doesn't sweep streets.
Right.
But I like those things. So I live in a city. Well, if those are the things you expect and demand from government, then move into a municipality that provides them. But Sean, wouldn't that be a wonderful incentive for annexation?
You would
think. If you want these things, annex into our city. But why, from a municipal leader standpoint, would you provide these things at next to no cost? You know, it's the old, why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free? Why would you move into a city if the city's simply providing all these services for little to no cost?
Well, yeah, it's being semi in the city. It's this fact that you can, it's medium. It's choosing medium. I'm not completely in the city, but I'm not completely in the county. I'm at medium.
Okay, well then let's look at it from the city residents' perspective. You're paying full rate ad valorem tax, full rate sales tax. Why in the world are your city leaders giving a break to the people that live outside the city, providing them with the exact same service? If I'm a city resident and my city's doing that, I'd be furious.
So you think that it should be the folks inside the city that should challenge why they're providing these services outside? Well, that's, I think, what here at Mobile, the Councilman Daves has said in so many words. Of course, we'll see how that goes with members of the council. Hey, can you hang on for a second?
Absolutely.
All right, coming right back. State Senator Chris Elliott, we're talking about a couple things. I mean, issues that are municipal county, but they're being addressed through a bill he's bringing back to Montgomery. We'll return more of this discussion and you at 343-0106. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. And by the way, congratulations, Ray. He picked up the 3-pack of tickets to tonight's game. Good job.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, and we're back at it, huh? This is like, even though this is not, this is the sixth day of January. For a lot of people, it's like the first day of the new year for them because of the way the holidays have been. So it's a day that I imagine if you wanted to go and get a seat at a place that served fattening food or had alcohol, you'd be good to go today. You'd be good to get it. But yeah, if you want to get anything like health-wise done, probably tough day. But if you want to go like fattening food and booze, this is probably a good day to get in there. No lines on this first real day back for a lot of folks in the new year. All right, continuing our conversation with State Senator Chris Elliott, talking about the upcoming session in Montgomery and some bills that will be showing up under the watch of Senator Elliott. You only have a couple weeks here until you get up and get rolling on this in Montgomery.
We do, and we're finalizing those, you know, those bills that each individual member will be carrying, and those conversations continue to occur so that we can be ready to go when the gavel falls for the first time.
You and I were talking about the how PJ started, and it's a conversation I had last week or the week before with Councilman Joel Daves, but he said the history of this, what, 1947, the city of Mobile, you said just kind of declared a PJ, right? This wasn't a vote?
So the law allows cities of certain size to exercise extraterritorial jurisdictions and police jurisdictions if those municipalities decide to. That means the council decides. That does not mean that the people that are actually being taxed, regulated, and policed outside the municipal limits decide that they want to have these services or be policed by these folks or be taxed by these city councils. And therein lies my very real fundamental problem, that these folks are being tax policed and regulated without representation.
It is. You're the one I hear that's making this from idealistic, not just really the idealistic argument is what puts you, you know, in a different class because you've made it that way. Pragmatically, people are arguing about this a lot of different ways. And so what would happen? This legislation, would this will be a, is it a shall versus may PJ? Is it a no PJ? Is it a, how do you define this?
So what we will have this year from my legislation, and again, this will be our second attempt at it, will essentially draw back police and fire jurisdictions. We will give time, and that time is not determined, but give time for the counties to be able to to budget for that, sheriff's offices to staff up to make these changes. And in the case of Westmobile, you'd have to stand up a volunteer fire department or have those folks. I mean, you'd have to do that. Last thing we want to do is leave somebody without the public services. But you'd have to have time to do that. But then what we will allow in the bill, what we'll provide for, is an ability for these police jurisdictions and extraterritorial jurisdictions to continue if the voters in the county decide they want to continue to do that. So there'll be an opportunity for a referendum if the legislation passes. So, for instance, in Mobile, the county commission could say, look, we want to put this to a vote of the people. We want to allow the people to vote on whether or not they'd like to continue this this scheme, if you will, and they can make that determination. But ideologically, at least, Sean, that gives them the ability to vote and decide that they are going to submit to that government that is governing them, whereas currently they haven't. They've never had an opportunity to do that. And at least that lets them decide, yes, I want to submit to this government, taxing, policing, and regulating, if they decide they want to do it. And there's some, especially rural counties across the state, where there may be one municipality or one large municipality where these types of situations work well. In larger counties with larger populations, with multiple police jurisdictions, multiple municipalities, they start tripping over each other and they start causing these types of problems that we're seeing right now. And you run the very real possibility of a county, for instance, like Mobile County, waking up one day with an additional 20, 30, 50, 70,000 people that they're responsible for providing public safety for that they weren't just before. And that is bad when we've gotten this that far, where all of a sudden people could wake up in the very near future without coverage that they need, public safety coverage.
Yeah, and it also skews any kind of discussion of not saying which way people want to go, but it does artificially skew the discussion of whether you would annex into a city or not.
It does. I mean, again, as we talked about before the break, if you're getting these services for essentially, you know, for a very much reduced rate, what is your incentive to ever annex into the city? You know, the opposition from this previously has come from municipalities, but from where I sit, I'm floored by that, because I would think that cities would want to take care of their municipalities, their citizens only. They wouldn't want to be out in the county providing services for county people. And frankly, if I'm a resident of a city and I'm paying all of these taxes to my municipality, I want them spending them on me. I don't want them spending them on the county residents outside that are getting the same services for a whole lot less tax. That's fundamentally unfair.
Now, of course, I mean, to make sure this is a fair discussion, although I've told the folks that advocate this or at least call in with this, there's no way to quantify it. But they always would say, not always, some people call the show and say, hey, people that are in the county or in the PJ are spending full freight sales tax in the city of Mobile. I mean, they're in there, so, I mean, they're already paying into this.
Well, and to some extent, yes, there are people paying sales tax that receive services in Mobile or other cities. But Sean, I mean, heck, I go to Mobile. You know, I live in Baldwin County.
We appreciate it.
I pay sales tax in Mobile too, but I don't receive city of Mobile services over here in Baldwin County. I mean, that one doesn't go very far with me.
We got a couple minutes here. I want to kind of run through. So that's a bill, pre-file bill, and that's SB what?
Let's see. That one has not been
filed
yet, actually.
Okay.
So that's a draft that's coming soon.
Okay. Let's talk about a couple of things. What else on the pre-file or on your to-file list?
So you'll see that one. You will see a bill for me that deals with the voting age. This is probably something you'll appreciate.
Okay.
Back in the early 2000s, we passed a law in Alabama that essentially raised the voting age to 14, and then allowed you to have an adult with you, an over 21 adult. Now, you probably remember when you learned to drive a boat, you know, you could do that at 12 years old.
Yep.
I think that we see an increase in boating accidents, and I've seen it, you know, growing up along the water. You see folks that don't know what they're doing, really, right?
Preach.
They didn't spend time learning some of the fundamentals. So what I will do is allow that 12-year-old operator to come back, but with the caveat that they're not driving a boat that's got more than 25 horsepower. At least then they can putt around, they can learn the basics and fundamentals when they're 12 years old and we've got their attention, as opposed to throwing them the keys to a 30-something contender with 900 horsepower on the back of it and saying, hey, have fun, little Jimmy. That gets us in trouble.
Yep. Okay, so that one's coming up. I tell you what, can you hold? We got the news break ahead. Can you hold over for a second?
Nope, no problem.
Okay, coming right back, we'll do this because I want to get into a couple more questions as we move forward, and we're going to address some of the same things we talked about from the House side. Same things we've talked about in the past. Some of these same, you'll say, Sean, you've been talking about this prison reform stuff for years. There's a reason, because it's been something that's been right on the cusp of getting done each year, maybe, and then the can gets kicked down the road. That means it probably comes up at the beginning of session like it is for the House. It'll come up for the Senate as well, and we'll get State Senator Chris Elliott's take on that when we get back, and a whole lot more as we roll through on this Monday. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 136 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. And get ready for what comes up next month. No, not Mardi. We'll talk about Mardi Gras, which, by the way, the Moon Pie Minute getting ready to start towards the end of this month as well, as we do get ready for Mardi Gras. But now we're talking about the legislative session. Goat Hill, Montgomery, y'all, and talking about it right now with State Senator District 32 Chris Elliott about some bills that he is bringing. And some of these are classic hits that you got, right? These are, you can bring them back.
Well, my experience, short experience, but even experience when I was on the county commission watching legislation, is any good piece of legislation, any good complex piece of legislation with lots of moving parts, usually takes more than a session to pass, and that's what we're seeing here true today. So we'll bring them back.
Well, and what I think is interesting on your PJ idea here is you could find, and you've done a good job, you could find different reasons and different groups of people that would get on board with it. They may be for different motivations, but you've given pragmatic reasons, but idealistic reasons as well. I think that it will serve that bill well.
Well, I certainly hope so. I'd like twice to be the charm here and be done with it and move on. There's other important things we need to focus on in the state.
Like prisons?
You know, that's an important thing.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you. That's one of those things that I wish just happened and we didn't have to deal with. I know that's not something.
No, I love that. I love that. Good for you. You said, you know, and Chip Brown said last hour, I want y'all, this is what this show's about. Tell folks what's real. I mean, there are a lot of different things you probably much would rather deal with in Montgomery, but this is one that y'all are kind of having to deal with.
Well, we are, and it's an issue that's been brewing for a long, long time, and unfortunately, it's just something we've got to deal with now. You know, I got to be honest with you. I get up in the morning and go, are we going to have to really spend a whole bunch more money on prisoners? I mean, there's so many other issues facing us. Don't we want to deal with education and schools and things like that? Why in the world is this the issue that it is? And the problem is it has been ignored for so very long, and we have. We have prisoners that are being held in atrocious, unsafe conditions to the point where the federal government is going to take over our prison system if we do not take an Alabama approach to it. And I can promise you that the federal government's approach will not be an Alabama approach and will be much more expensive than anything we can come up with to placate them in the meantime.
There you go. I mean, that's for people if you say, well, I just don't care. There's no condition that's so bad that I would even give a darn. They're prisoners, yada, yada. Okay, then let's move it to the other side of this. And this is, you and I have talked about this in the past and looked at the situation in California. I know the state of Alabama has been in receivership before. You tell people, I mean, this is real money, and we would be compelled to just let prisoners out, right? I mean, just turn open the jail and let people out.
Correct, and that's what the government's done before. That's what they did in California. They let prisoners out in California and then still almost bankrupt the state on top of that by requiring additional facilities, additional staff and things of that nature to bring the prisons up to par in the view of the federal government. Now, I will say I have not in my conversations seen that that's something that they want to do, but they are kind of holding that over Alabama's head and demanding we head in a different direction. But to your point about, you know, folks that say there's no condition that's too bad. You know, these are mm-hmm. criminals. They've been convicted. They've been sent to prison. These are bad people. And the answer to that is, yeah, they are. Okay. But if you're in jail for 3 or 5 years on a burglary charge, or you're in jail, you know, you shouldn't die there.
Right. No, I'm giving you the opinion of some of the callers over time.
You shouldn't be sexually assaulted on a daily basis.
Right.
And unfortunately, those are some of the things that we have going on right now in our prisons that we just simply have to deal with.
Right. I mean, you have to. But what will be the motivator here is, sure, doing what's right and all that, that's one thing. But this judge telling us, hey, the feds are going to make you do this. And when you're talking about making us do it, that's making us pay for it, correct? We would have to pony up the money. The feds would decide what we need to do to fix it, and then Alabama cuts the check.
You're absolutely right, and I can promise you, I have sat across the table from Judge Thompson, and he doesn't care how much it costs, not even a little bit.
But y'all, you hear that? That's, I know we've been talking about this for years, but I mean, finally, that there's going to be a day of reckoning on this. I mean, finally, they are going to get tired. Now, I know that some discussions happened after sessions this year, right? And some moves were made by the state that at least bought us a few months or 6 months or something like that.
That's true. And again, I think an ongoing willingness on the part of the legislature and the executive branch to show that we are willing to do something to move in the right direction, that we understand there is a problem, and we are willing to move in their direction, if you will, that is allowing them to continue to let us do it as opposed to them doing it. Again, I don't think they want the job of fixing Alabama's prisons. They're screwed up enough as it is. But our prisoners ought to be safe from each other and from guards while they're there. We have a real prison contraband problem that needs to be addressed.
You'd say,
and we have a facility problem that needs to be addressed. And if we can do that, prison can and should still be a very undesirable place to go. But you ought not to worry again about being murdered or sexually assaulted every day you're there. That's beyond what our Constitution, United States Constitution, allows, and that's unfortunately what we have going on right now.
You know, there's part of this also that there's a brick and mortar, a building stuff component, right? But there's also a, like you said, mental health and safety. So there are two parts. Could they be addressed separately? Could, like we've talked about in the past, the executive branch, Governor Ivey, address maybe the infrastructure, and then y'all in the legislative branch address the mental health or the safety? What do you see? What are you hearing?
Well, I think it's going to be, frankly, a multi-bill, multi-year approach. I don't expect to come out of this session with a solution to all of this. I think all of this is going to be incremental. But I think at some point we've got to realize as Alabamians, we have two options. We're going to pay a certain amount of this now, or we're going to pay a certain amount of this later. But when we allow some of these mental health issues to go untreated and unaddressed, they end up in our prison system. The untreated mental health problem turns into a substance abuse problem that turns into a criminal problem that lands them in our county jails, first of all. And oh, by the way, by the time they've been through the mental health problems and the substance abuse problems and they've started breaking the law, guess what they haven't been focused on? Their health.
Right.
And oh, by the way, you get to pay for that. So they come in and they've got health problems on top of all these other issues. That's the issue we're facing right now. We're paying for it anyway. We just need to address how we're going. What's the cheapest way to deal with this? And that's what I'm focused on right now. I want to make the most cost-effective, efficient, and cheapest way for the Alabama taxpayer.
Well, you know, this is a great segue into me, you know, continuing to promote my idea of Alabama's prison lottery.
Well, I think you're going to see a proposal this year. Good segue, like
you
said. You know, you've seen the Porch Creek Indians come out with a proposal. I think that it is probably an initial proposal, as you might expect.
Mm-hmm.
Any astute business person's dealing, they're going to put one offer on the table, and then you're going to haggle some. But I was interested to hear the Speaker McCutcheon I guess this has been a couple weeks ago at the County Commission Legislative Conference. He and I both spoke at that. And he said point blank, I cannot build a coalition with my caucus, the Republican caucus, to pass a lottery. Can't get it through the House. Can't build a coalition.
Wow.
So he's saying basically, I've got to work with the Democrats in order to get us a lottery. And when that happens, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying when that happens, there are strings attached. And those strings look like expanded gambling in Macon and Greene County, where there is already, you know, the Green Track and all those places, Victory Land, et cetera. Those are the things that you have to negotiate on, you know, in the House in order to get these things done. So we'll be very curious to see what comes out of the House. I am in favor of a lottery in the state of Alabama, but I am uncommitted as to a bill that I haven't seen yet coming out of the House and what kind of wheeling dealing has to happen to actually get something out of the House.
Well, what kind? I mean, yeah, how much? And it's weird, though, that it's, you know, it used to be that things came to the Senate, right, to die. And now they've gone to the House to die, at least in the last session. Well, I mean, what kind of wheel? I mean, how much of it is, you know, making sure that there's not the electronic lottery or there is electronic lottery? How much of it is based on, hey, this much should go to ETF, this much should stay in general fund? I mean, which one of those issues is like a 50%er? Which one is a 10%er? Which one is a, you know, outlier?
Well, and you're playing the 3D chess that we play every day, right?
Sure.
Okay, you gain a vote here, but you lose three here. You gain three here, but you lose two here to try to figure out how to get it done. I mean, I told you before, I want a paper lottery in the state of Alabama. I think we're ready for one. Now, whether we pay for prisons or pay for prisons with it or not, is that something?
That's all my idea. Yeah, that's my idea.
You'll have to lobby for, but I'm in favor of that, but how to get there is problematic. Like you said, some folks are paper lottery only. I'm one of those folks, okay? Other people say, no, there's much more revenue if you allow this online and gaming on your phone. I can see some problems with that just based on my children's phone usage. So I have some issues there. Then there are folks that say, oh, it should go to education. Well, we've got a $7+ billion education budget. We throw another couple $100,000 in there, we're not really moving the needle. But you've got a general fund that pays for absolutely everything else in this state.
Yep.
And it is gasping for air every single day. And that's, you know, probably where the money is more needed, and where we're going to see more services for the regular citizen than we would by putting it in the ETF. It's just not a big number that would make a huge difference in the ETF. Now, you have people that say, but look at Florida's lottery. And look at Georgia's lottery, and I go, look at Orlando, and look at Atlanta. I mean, we don't have an Atlanta in Alabama. We don't have the population or the visitors that would generate revenues equal to those states' lotteries. And that's the kicker. We can't, it's not going to be the panacea in Alabama that everybody thinks it's going to be based on what our neighbors do with their lottery money.
There we go. Well, we'll talk about this more as session gets started, or hopefully before that. And you said, once again, February 4th, y'all are back up there, and that's when we'll be talking about this through what? Through probably May? What are you thinking?
I think so. I think we'll be there through May. I think we've got big issues to face again this year. We've got, you know, the infrastructure challenges that we'll continue, and we'll continue to fight for and be an advocate for here in coastal Alabama. But I do not see this being an easy session. I think it's going to be a long one, and we're ready for it.
All right. Very good, State Senator Chris Elliott. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely, and happy to talk throughout session as we go along.
Oh, don't worry. Yeah, I'll be ringing your phone, just like always, for sure. Thank you. Hey, coming right back, before we wrap it up and Paul Feinbaum comes on, maybe if you follow me on Twitter, you saw my profane rant here. Wasn't very happy about the news about Frontier Airlines and Mobile's downtown airport. I'll give you that story in just a second. Stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
You know, at first I thought it was anger. Then disappointment. I don't know, maybe a mix of both. Disappointing, yes. I mean, come on. This is absolutely self-serving. Usually I can remove myself and act as at least as fair of an arbiter as I can be on a news story, but this one, John Sharp over at AL.com. It's not John Sharp didn't do it. He's just reporting the story that the Frontier Airlines announcing today it's made a, quote, difficult decision to suspend all operations at the downtown Mobile airport in April based on lack of sufficient demand to support the service. Come on, people! Can you not do better than... God dang it! Can y'all not do better than that? I mean, I'm trying to take a calm approach to this. I'm so sick of us losing carriers that can get us better prices so we can travel. I mean, the family and I used it this year to be able to afford to go out to Colorado to go to a national park that now we'd have to pay Delta $4,000 for the tickets. And I'm just disappointed in this. The quote continues here. We greatly appreciate and support the partnership and support we have received from the airport and the community in bringing the service to Mobile, and will continue to evaluate the potential for future opportunities, said Jennifer De La Cruz, spokeswoman at Frontier. Well, that's just great. Isn't that swell? Frontier is the only airline providing flights from the brand new passenger terminal at the downtown Mobile airport that is located within the Brooklyn Aeroplex south of downtown Mobile. $8 million terminal financed through the airport authority's cash reserve, opened in May and is named Terminal 1. I think the way we're going, y'all, let's just name it Terminal, because I don't know the danger of having Terminal 2 anytime soon when you don't have a carrier to fly out of the terminal. Terminal 1 is situated inside a 50,000-square-foot building and partially serves as Airbus Logistics Center. The Mobile Airport Authority is expected to release a statement later today. The airline is currently providing flights to Denver. Last year, it offered flights to Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. Frontier, meanwhile, said it'll begin providing flights from Huntsville International Airport to Denver starting on May 1st. So it wasn't enough, Huntsville, to get our damn baseball team. Now you got our low-cost carrier flying to Denver. I hope you're happy up there. Get somebody in Mo Brooks' office on the phone so I can scream at them. Meanwhile, the low-cost airliner also provides service from Huntsville to Orlando. Frontier in September announced it had suspended service in Birmingham. The airline had provided flights from Birmingham to Philadelphia, Denver, and Orlando. So there you go. Oh, what a great story. What a beautiful story. What gave my favorite, because I like to take trips out west. I like the mountains. I like all that stuff. And you could get to Denver and then do stuff out of there. But once you got to Denver, you could get affordable fares for families to go other places out west. Not now. Nope, not now. Terminal 1, which I call our last terminal. Okay, let's go to, you know what? Wait, I got a minute left here. Maybe Derek and Fairhope can call me down.
Man, that's been Mobile's problem the whole entire time. And, you know, I blame it. There's several reasons I blame it on, but I was talking to Dalton. You know, Mobile pretty much nailed the coffin when they didn't develop the front area.
So that's why we lost the low-cost carrier?
Well, I mean, it all goes together. There's no reason to come to Mobile. You know, it's not a destination city, so whenever you're trying to add on, like we're going to do low-cost carriers, Mobile by itself, just for its citizens, are not enough to support something like that.
Then I give up. Then I, you know what, I give up. I'm going to move up on the river, and if we can get the generator running up there, I'll do my show on a cable. Well, I'll have to come down river to see the family. Bring supplies. Now, I'm over it. Trying to do something for my city. I am I appreciate the call, Derek, even though you're calling from Fairhope. I'm a Mobile homeboy. This is a place I love. And I am dang disappointed that we can't continue that. Now we go back to the same thing that kind of makes you, it makes it hard. And then people say, well, I'm going to go to Pensacola. I'm going to go to New Orleans. I'm going to... And Lisa and others, don't worry. I hide this from you. Lisa's worried that I'm going to have a stroke. Don't worry. It'll be, not saying I won't eventually have one, but it won't be today. You don't like me so upset? Well, y'all should have gotten with me when we used to have low-cost carriers flying out of here. Now they're going to go away. And yeah, I'm ticked off. I'm beyond that. I'm disappointed. And Paul Feinbaum, he's on the way next. I'm going to go have myself a water or maybe even a Diet Sprite. I'll see y'all mañana.